Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. It is Tuesday, August the 13th. Not Friday the 13th, Tuesday the 13th. Well, anyway, neither here nor there. We've got a little racing coverage to talk about, and we also have a very special guest who is on standby right now. A very good friend of the show and mine, playing Colonel Harlan Sanders on The Food That Built America on History Channel. And that episode actually airs tonight because I've watched the first two and he wasn't in it in those two, so it has to be tonight because it's a three-night deal. You may remember he also played Dale Earnhardt Sr. in TNT's The History of NASCAR, the one and only Jeff Sandor. Jeff, welcome back to the show, buddy.
Oh, man. Glad to be back, Vinny. Big shout out to you and all the Garage Talk listeners. How the heck are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad. I'm going through, waiting for the racing season to get over and talking about other things other than racing because, you know, there's interesting things and people that, like yourself, you played Dale Earnhardt. We had you on then, and then you got the host, Gallery of Guns, which is another subject I like to talk about, and now you're playing the guy that invented the stuff, some of the stuff I like to eat.
I know, man. Playing the KFC man himself, Mr. Colonel Sanders. Yeah, I now have something in common with Reba McEntire. Go figure. Why? Yeah, I don't know, man. Where do we go from here? I've been pretty darn lucky for a couple people that follow my career. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I was talking to a casting director just yesterday, and we were sitting down having a meeting. And I said, yeah, if you just took all the personalities that I played on TV and put them behind me, I would look like the cult of personality, man. Like, there's just so many faces that I've got to portray, you know, and the latest and greatest is Colonel Sanders. And who doesn't like fried chicken? Come on. Everybody does.
I mean, I remember back in the day, you might be a little younger, but I don't know if they had these around when growing up. Kentucky Fried Chicken was part of what they called Geno's Hamburgers fast food chain before they went on their own and Geno's closed up. Geno's was actually you can probably Google all this stuff. Gino Marchetti, who used to be an old NFL player, I guess decided to go up against McDonald's, which, of course, the McDonald brothers will be on tonight as well. And
yep,
it's just amazing how all things tied together. The first night, because I didn't want to miss your episode because I knew I was having you on, so I'd have something to talk about. Or now we can promote your episode because you're on tonight if they're coming on the show.
Yeah, so like, well, Milton, you know, Hirsch, whether I'm in – oh, yeah, man, whether I'm in the episodes or not, I mean, I am, in fact, in this one tonight. But the first two, it's a three-part miniseries, The Food That Built America on History Channel, only on History Channel. The whole show, barring my stuff, the entire show is so well-crafted. It's well-produced. It's well-directed. It's incredibly well-written and well-acted. There was a lot of talented people on the show. We filmed in and around New York City. And it was just an exciting experience, and I'm following along with the first couple of parts of the show from Sunday and Monday's episodes. And man, wow, there's so much history, and it's so fascinating. A lot of interesting characters, and it really gives you kind of the behind the scenes of some of our favorite companies that built up some of our favorite food products, like candy bars, Chicken, and Heinz sauce, and then ketchup. I mean, the stories behind these products is absolutely fascinating. So it's a fun show to watch, and it's a very informative show, and it's incredibly well done. Very, very pleased with how it's turning out, and excited to see what they did tonight.
So that's what you were in New York for a while ago.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I hate traveling, man. It's like I feel like I'm in the CIA sometimes. People ask me, like, online, they're like, so where you at? I'm like, I'm in New York this week and next week. And what do you do? It's like, well, I can't tell you. The studio won't say. I read for a film last week and had a meeting with casting. And good meeting. And I'm in consideration. I got passed up to the producers and director for final approval. But I can't even say what the movie. It's a big movie. It's a really cool movie. It's going to be filming in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I can't tell anybody. And it's like, I really wish I could brag a little bit about it because it's cool. But that's how it works, man.
Go ahead. Now, I was going to say, all your neighbors are going to follow you to the set because they're going to see all these film crews down there and wonder what's going on. They say, look, Jeff. There's Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
I know. Yeah, it's a great thing, man. Like, I'm really a character actor. Samuel L. Jackson is not a character actor. Samuel L. Jackson plays Samuel L. Jackson in whatever Samuel L. Jackson is in, right? But that's not me. You know, I change my look. I change my weight. I change my hair. Everything changes about me with every character. I mean, I really wanted to be the Guy Pearce of American acting, and that was kind of my model going in. So there's so many stuff that you've probably seen me in, but wouldn't recognize me unless somebody was like, that's him. That's the guy, which is cool. It's weird. I'm in a local commercial that's running now, and the gym I go to always plays the damn commercial. And it seems like they play it every time I'm in the damn gym. It's really funny. So I'm walking through the gym and I'll look up at the TV, and there I am talking and walking around, and it's just such a weird feeling. I cannot get used to it. And people, I'm kind of looking around going, all right, people picking up on this. And then, you know, here and there you kind of get some sideways looks like, is that him? That's not him. No, I think it is him. Kind of a deal. And it's a weird thing, man. I'm trying to get used to it, but I got a cool job, and I'm one of the luckiest dudes on the face of the planet. That's for sure.
Well, for one thing, after being in the Army and then in law enforcement, I mean, it's a totally different path, but if it makes you happy, do it, because then it's not work.
Man, it's funny you say that. It's always work. It's always work because, you know, I always have a lot of pressure even getting the role. You know, people always are – they're always curious as to what it's like to be a television actor and do this stuff. And to be honest with you, you know, I don't get caught up in a lot of the press stuff. I don't get caught up in the image crap. It's like, look, man, I'm a blue collar dude. I always have been. I, like you said, I was in the Army. I was a police officer for almost 15 years. You know, I go to these things and I do the jobs. I do the shows. At the end of the day, it's like I want to have my lines memorized. I want to do a good job. I don't want to be late. I want to treat everybody with respect, and I want to not get fired because I've got, you know, I got bills to pay. I got to pay rent, and I got to buy groceries just like every single other person. So those are the things that I'm thinking about when I'm doing it. I'm not really too caught up in the glam part of it or the, you know, it's kind of it's a lot of pressure, you know, without a doubt. And it requires a lot of concentration and focus because there's a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of energy that other people beyond me are putting into all these things. I mean, they call it a production for a reason. I mean, it takes a team, and whatever it is that you see me in, you know, it's all the people behind me that make it as good as it is. It's not just what I'm doing. I'm just bringing a piece of it. You know, it's everybody else that's putting in a lot of labor and a lot of hours and energy. And I'm just a lucky guy who gets to be a part of it, you know?
And more power to you. I mean, yeah, it is a lot of work because figure, as you said, you want to be on time, you want to have your lines down. And that's where all that military stuff comes in. Precision, precision, precision.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, it's funny. You'd mentioned the NASCAR show. I really thought, like, when I was a kid, I knew I was going to be an actor. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew I wanted to be on TV. I knew I wanted to do that as a child. And I started after I left high school. I dropped out, you know, left that and started studying acting at the American Studio of Acting. And, you know, after my dad died and, you know, I had some tough times, I did end up in the military. And then I ended up, you know, putting myself through college through the GI Bill, and I put myself through the police academy, became a cop. I found something else I was good at. But, you know, long story short, I think the universe kind of knows your path and you have, it kind of has a funny way of steering you back to where you're supposed to be. And I remember being in acting school at 19 years old. And I remember saying to one of my good friends who he's out in LA now, we're still good friends to this day. But I remember sitting in class with him and saying, man, I think I'm going to have to age into this. I need to age into being this actor. I've got to get the experience. And I had went through, like I said, almost 15 years of law enforcement. And the last few years of that, I started dabbling back into the acting until the acting kind of took over. But I had thought to myself, I was like, man, I wasted all this time. You know, I could have been training, I could have been studying, but the skills that I learned in the infantry, the skills that I learned being a police officer, the situations that I've been placed in, the experience gained and the knowledge gained from those experiences are stuff you can't learn in any school. There's no acting teacher that's going to be able to teach you that. And so much of that experience has really, I think, propelled me further in television because there's just not a lot of actors walking around who they know how to be a cop. I mean, they can pretend to be a cop, but when you did it for a long time, you don't have to pretend. You just got to remember. And there's this authenticity, I think, that comes with that is very attractive, you know, to a lot of shows and a lot of different stories and characters. So, man, I value the process. I value the journey. That's what it's all about for every single one of us.
That's for sure. And if you, like you said, if you get a role as a cop, you can refer back to that experience. A role as in a military film, you got that behind you as well. And then you can use your other life experiences as far as, I guess, whatever roles you might need to play, playing iconic figures in history like Dale Earnhardt or Colonel Sanders. That's where you have to get into your own head.
Yeah, you really got to dig in, man. The most challenging thing to me, and, you know, I figured that out immediately when I played Dale Earnhardt for CMT. The most challenging thing for me as an actor is, you see, when you have a character that's completely fictional on the one hand, and on the other hand, you have a character that is or was an actual person that we have archival footage of. Like, there's interviews, there's a video of them doing whatever it is that they do well, and you can go on YouTube and you can watch these people, and you can listen to their voice and you can see how they moved, all of a sudden the pressure as an actor portraying the real person becomes even greater. Because now it's not like when you're playing a fictional person, they just take your performance at face value. No, what they're going to do is they're going to take your performance and they're going to compare it to the real person. So to really, you really have to do your homework and really spend a lot of time in the mirror and really be prepared for that kind of critique and criticism, you know. And I take every character that I play, real or not, you know, real or fictional, I try to take it at face value and just stick with the script and the story and operate under the guidance of the writing team, my director, the showrunner, and just listen to these people, you know. And I've found that I've been very lucky to have just brilliant and creative people around me. So they become huge assets to me when I'm having to play the real people, you know, like Colonel Sanders, for instance. And fortunately, this is a Colonel Sanders that you're going to see. This is kind of the more real to life dude. This is not the Santa Claus, the chicken Santa Claus, as I call him. He's not just the white haired guy in the suit. You know, you see the real gritty, blue collar, tough ass Kentucky guy who started out in a gas station and built an empire through hard work, perseverance, and that Kentucky work ethic. And that's the kind of the story that we're telling tonight. And I hope that really adds some extra spices to the original recipe, so to speak.
A little more than the 11 herbs and spices, right?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And some of the comments I've already seen online has been really positive. They've been showing a little sneak peeks of the Colonel and what we've done, and the consensus is, man, Colonel Sanders was a badass. And I'm like, yeah, because I played it that way, man. he's got to be a tough guy if I'm in the hot seat there. You know, that's the interesting story about that gentleman. And I'm excited. I'm stoked to share it. And the way they put this show together has just been beautiful. I couldn't be happier with how they've done it. And I'm confident they've put together a fabulous episode tonight. So yeah, it's a far off take from the chicken Santa Claus. You're seeing the real nitty gritty guy, and he's a cool, tough dude.
Well, the clip they keep showing over and over again is one where I guess you're checking, not choking the chicken, but
there were no chicken chokings going on. There was some chicken eating, but no chicken choking going on.
Right. But where Harlan has that shotgun and he's ready to sight in on somebody running from him, I guess they tried to steal his recipe. And we'll have to be have to catch the episode to find out what happens. But he was ready to blast somebody pretty good.
It's definitely an action-packed sequence, and it definitely puts the Colonel in kind of a different light. And I think it's a pretty exciting the gunfight scene was hands down my favorite scene to shoot. And I think everybody who was involved in that sequence, that was like the pinnacle of the show. That was just, we spent all day for about 60 seconds of footage, but we worked all day on it and had just such a blast doing it. And everybody had a good time during that scene. It's my favorite scene of the entire script. And we've got some good ones, though, man. I mean, there's some great moments throughout, not just Colonel Sanders' story, but the McDonald's brothers and Hines and Hershey and just Milton Post, all these personalities. We're getting to see the behind the scenes of all of these folks. And there's so much history. Very, very cool stuff. And I'm just excited and lucky to get to be a part of it, man. And what an iconic character. I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to play Abe Lincoln or some shit next. I don't know.
I never really. Hey, you never know. You into horror movies?
You really don't know. I don't know, man. I never know what scripts are going to come my way. Things just come my way that feel right, and I just jump on them.
Because I have a friend on a Facebook friend that was, I guess, cast in a little bit of a show called Hillbilly Horror Show.
Okay.
And one of the people in that produced that was a predecessor on Gallery of Guns, Bautista.
Okay.
And that's Tamara
Glynn,
who played Samantha Powers in Halloween 5. Well, she's now an iconic. Now she's producing horror movies, so hey, you never know. Maybe your paths will cross. Maybe through me, maybe not. We'll see what happens. I'm trying to get her on the show, but she's been a busy lady. So we do chat back and forth on the interwebs there. So who knows?
That's a great thing about social media, man. You could use social media in a number of ways, some harmful, but I think if you do it the right way, it keeps you connected to some good people, and it really helps you stay close and connected to friends and family. And we're all busy, man. Life is always getting in the way if you let it. You really got to kind of just you got to take things moment by moment and just pace yourself. I used to work really, really hard, and I would get to the point where I'd be physically ill. And I finally said, man, I just got to slow down, and I got to stop and smell the roses. You got to enjoy the process. You got to be process driven, not just results driven. And I think that is, that's been instrumental for me. And, I can't throw the word balance around enough, particularly to people in my industry. You got to pace yourself, man, because this ride's a short ride, and you got to enjoy every second of it.
Oh, that's for sure. And, life is the, what they call that little dash between your birth year and your death year on your tombstone, and look how tiny that is,
Oh, yeah, man. And I'm grateful. I'm 39 years old, Vinny, 39, and about to turn 40 in a few months. And I'm going to tell you right now, I had my middle brother. Older brother, he's the middle child. I'm the baby. My middle brother passed away when he was 20. Okay.
Wow.
I was 7 when he died. Yeah. So, and at 7 years old, that was really my first experience losing a significant person in my family. And from that moment forward, inadvertently, I really got a profound gratitude and respect for life. And, as the years went by, I understood how fragile life is. And I'm going to tell you right now, dude, if I died tomorrow, God forbid, but if I died tomorrow, I lived a full 100 years. I really did. I mean, I've been so lucky, and I've been able to cross paths with so many just wonderful people. I mean, there's always some shitheads along the road, but I focus on the good people, man, and the opportunities and the experiences. And had I not made the tough decisions that I made and took the chances that I took, I wouldn't be on the phone right now with you. And it's just been a beautiful ride, and I hope that it continues many, many years. And I hope I can play Abraham Lincoln or George Washington, or I don't know, maybe we'll reinvent the Equalizer or the A-Team, or whatever crazy things that we find ourselves getting to work on. But there's a lot of stories to tell, and I'm always excited enough for the challenge to tell them.
Well, how does the process work? I mean, they send you scripts, and you read whatever you get and say, oh, this looks interesting, and then you audition?
Yeah, most of the time. I mean, I've had it work a number of different ways. Most of the time, things get filtered through my agent, and I've got three. I have a good team of agents. They look at the stuff, they send it to me. And most of the time I will compete against other actors for it. Once in a while I'll get something direct where they just go to my agents and say, we want Jeff, is he available? And then we go from there. I've had casting directors reach out to me, and I've had producers who I've worked for directly reach out to me and just, call me or email me and say, hey, we got this going on. Can you do it? You want to do it? So, I mean, I enjoy the competition. I enjoy competing for the roles, because when I get that, I know I've beat out some really good people. And that makes me, I mean, I know it kind of sounds weird or arrogant, but I feel good. Like I'm always very insecure about what I do, and I'm always anxious to please people. You know, I want everybody to be satisfied with what I'm doing with the character or how I'm delivering the lines or whatever it is, whatever choices I'm making. So once I get that nod of approval, it's a very fulfilling feeling. It's like all the hard work kind of paid off. But then it's also nice when they just reach out and say, hey, do you want to do this? Because it's like, well, there's no pressure. It's like, you've already proven yourself, guy. You know, we want to work with you again. Usually it's again. I have to win them over. And then from there, you know, it's like it's a little bit smoother sailing, you know.
Well, that's a good thing, too. Like you said, you like the competition. It does. And when you do beat out a bunch of people, it's like, you know, you were the best of the lot, but like you, and then, you know, then there's the days where when they reach out, like you said, and I don't know, it just makes it less stressful, I guess, when you know you already got the part and don't have to do battle for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always feel grateful, man. I mean, when I get it, when I beat them out, you know, I try to stay very humble about it because I know how subjective what actors do is. Like, it's an individual perspective. It is, you could have one casting director look at the same performance and say it's great. You could have a different casting director look at the same actor, the same performance, and say it was crap. It's all perspective and opinion. So I can't take it all but so serious. You know, like, if I don't get a part, I don't get upset about it. If I go to an audition and there's several actors who resemble me and they're reading for the same role, I honest to God don't look at these people as competition. I don't do that anymore. I used to. I used to be really, really super insecure about it. But now, I mean, I've been doing it so long, and I've been, you know, since I've gotten to build the resume the way I've built it, it's like, man, I got this role for 5 minutes, and I'm going to go in here and I'm just going to play. I'm going to play. And if the people I'm in there in the room with, the director, the casting director, the writer, whoever's in the room, a producer, whoever, if they see something in me and they want me to continue to do that work and go to and actually, you know, do the role for real, then great. And if not, that's great too, because there's a lot of work out there. I'll catch on to something else, you know. So I don't get too wrapped around the wheels about it anymore, if that makes any sense.
I guess it's better that way, this way, like you said, for your own thing.
Well,
a mutual friend of
ours. It works.
Hello?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay. A mutual friend of ours, Anne Marie, you know Anne Marie.
We just did a little thing. No, she has entrepreneured her own production company. This woman is so talented. She continues to just reinvent herself and her career over and over. And her husband have formed a really great team, a really great production. I think it's Big Bear Productions or Bear Productions, something to that effect. Forgive me for not knowing exactly. But, yeah. She's I got some FaceTime with her a couple months ago, and we got to hang out, me, her, and her husband. And it was just she's just an incredible lady, man. And I expect her to continue to do some big things in the business, and particularly in this region. And I don't know, man. It's exciting to see her continue to blossom. I know the Gun Show, unfortunately, after 9 seasons, they decided to pull the plug on it. I'm hoping to reinvent that show and do another kind of version of it at some point in the future. But we'll see what happens. We'll see how it shakes out. I just had such a good time doing the show, and there's some different things I'd love to bring to it and get to do. And we'll see, man. We'll see. Anne's good people, though. She's gonna keep on rocking and rolling and reinventing herself. And whether it's on a producer level, a casting level, or a talent level, you know, she's she's got the goods, man. I mean, she's dependable, hardworking, and she's just good to work with. You know, I wish I, you know, no disrespect to Aaron on season 9, but I really wished I had a season with Ann on top of
right.
with Aaron. That would have been fun, you know, a lot of fun.
Well, and she got her start as the original Miss Sprint Cup.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a good racing tie-in for you there.
Oh, I've had every Miss Sprint Cup there was on the show. So,
that's terrible. That's terrible.
Yeah.
I bet you were so miserable. So miserable.
Oh,
having all these beautiful high-end women on the show. That's what are you doing talking to me, man?
Hey, I meet people. I find them interesting. I want to talk to them. If you want to redo that show or a show like that, I want to be your co-host. I think we'd have some fun.
Oh, my God, man. There'd probably be a warrant for our arrest in whatever state we were filming.
Well,
we would have a great time doing it, man. It was it's such a blast. I know the political climate continues to suck for us constitutionalists, us pro-gun folks. But, you know, I always encourage people, man. I'm like, just be safe, you know, and do things the best you can and exercise your rights. And, you know, if you like guns, cool, you know, get them, have fun with them, treat them safe, treat them with respect. If you don't like guns, then don't get one. It's all good. I don't care.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's not your jam. That's fine, man. I get it. But, you know, I'm an open advocate for people. I'm an open advocate for human rights, and I'm an open advocate for our Constitution. And I believe so much in guns and the amendments and the Constitution that I swore an oath to defend and protect that Constitution not once but twice in the span of two different careers. So, it definitely hits home. And if I ever get the chance to get up there and do some more stuff for Gallery Guns, for Davidson's, or for any of those folks, yeah, man, I'm 100% all in.
Maybe we could talk Ann into producing a different one. Better for them.
Let's do it. I'm in. Let's pressure her. What do you think? You want to help me out with
that? Yeah. Sure. I'm sure she'd be into doing it too.
I hope so. I think the fans would definitely get behind it.
Well, there was one time where all of a sudden I had a text that was from Ann. It was like, here's a role I want you to try. I need to know by this. And I'm like, does she get the right person? So I'm looking at the lines and all that. I think I probably might have gotten it because I didn't know. I would have had to make a video, and I didn't have the means to do that. And playing an Italian mafia guy, come on now. It's like right up my alley. And I'm from New Jersey, so, you know, it's kind of like, you know,
oh, yeah.
Area. So,
yeah, man, that's like all you. You just, you know, play pseudo Vinny. And you even got the name. I think Vinny, that's a great, cool Italian sounding, you know, mafia name. Not to stereotype you, but it's a cool name, you know. You can just play yourself. Get paid for it.
Well, well, anyway, I got back to her. I said, look, there's no way I can make this happen. She goes, oh, my God, I sent it. I thought you were somebody else. I didn't mean to send it to you, but, you know. I said, well, if I could have done it, I would have sent you the I mean, if you want to.
Yeah, well.
I mean, if you wanted an Italian to be a mafia guy or a stool pigeon, you know. Hey, I could be as Italian as you. I could be stereotype or not. You know, I'm Italian and my name is Vinny, so.
You're like a method actor at that point. You're just like, I'm all in, man. I'm playing myself. I'm method here. Let's do it. Yeah, I hope we can. I do hope we can revive Gallery one day. I'd like to see that happen. But, you know, it's all part of the journey. You know, Ann and I talked about some stuff, and it's just all part of the journey, man. You never know what doors are going to open. And I think you just have to keep working hard, do good work, and treat people how you want to be treated. And, you know, the opportunities come. They really do. And I always tell people the thing that's brought me the most positive results in my career has been kindness. It's been just treating people good and treating people the same.
whether it's the craft service person or it's the director I'm talking to, you know, I'm going to talk to them the same. I'm going to give them the same respect because it's the kind of respect that I want to get. And that goes a long, long way, not just in the industry of entertainment, but just in the world, man. You know, treating people good and putting that out there. And the karma comes back around to you, man, and doors will open. I can promise you that.
Oh, it sure does. The other thing was, one thing, my only critique of Gallery of Guns, the camera they use for the studio, was so antiquated. With today's HD stuff.
Yeah.
I'm watching this on a 50-inch flat screen, and it's all drawn out. Everybody looks stretched wider than they should be if they actually got a modern camera, I think things would have been a lot better. Even a 720, you know, a little
Man,
bit better
high
def than the thing they had.
I'm telling you, though, as an actor, though, that makes me nervous. When I hear high def, I get nervous because I'm like, geez, they're going to see every wrinkle in my face and the camera's going to add 10 more pounds. You know, I get kind of self-conscious, but no, I'm kidding, man. I know what you're saying. And there was things like that I, like I said, it was a great show. It was great for what they did. They had a 9-season run. That's a phenomenal run for any television show. That's a great run. But I definitely want to, I felt a little constrained when I was on it, and I really wanted to go back out and do it and make it a lot more fun, a lot more entertaining, and not quite so infomercial, you know. Still put some good information about the firearms that's on the show, but I wanted to kind of present it in more of an entertaining and fun way. And you know, we need more pumpkin and watermelon blowing up of on the range. I wanted to see more fun stuff, but those are ideas that we're going to entertain for future shows, and you know, if we can make it happen. So we'll see what comes out the pike, man. I mean, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
For sure. I'm thinking about that too. How far? I mean, they show you hitting the Steel X targets downrange. How far away were they firing? I couldn't tell if it was 7 yards, 15 yards.
Man, I'd have to go back and look. I mean, there were some things that we were fairly, like, for pistol, you know, we were like 10, 15 feet. I mean, we weren't very far away. You know, when we were doing rifles, we were scoping in. We were, you know, we were several yards back. I mean, it was, it definitely was. The funny thing was, I didn't have to shoot good. Like, even if I shot bad, it would still look good. That was one of the things that I loved about the camera work. And the other cool thing was watching the footage is like they really seemed to break out the high def on the, like when we were on the range, because you see the, man, you can almost see the fire and the exhaust just kicking out of the firearm when you pull the trigger on the discharge, and it just looks so cool. I mean, they had so many slow motion type of motion captures when we were shooting. I thought it really was, that was a lot of fun to just look at after the fact. It was good stuff.
That's pretty neat. I know cutting loose my 357 or 44 Magnum left a nice flame trail. Yeah.
Oh yeah, man, I tell you. And one of the AR-15, that was the first time I'd ever got to fire an AR-15 was on the show. Man, that sucker's loud. Yeah. That thing was so loud in comparison.
We used to shoot the old M16s, and of course we wore earplugs, but I didn't think they were that bad, which is...
You know what would be fun, as I would love to, because I was a rifleman, and I was a M16 gunner. So I'd really like to shoot side-by-side, like shoot an M16, and then shoot the AR-50. They're not really comparable, you know, rifles by comparison per se. Just to listen to the sound, I'd like to hear that, like, if one's louder than the other. Because I feel like the AR-15 is just louder. I don't know why. I mean, I hadn't shot an M16 in 20 years, so I might not remember. But it'd be kind of cool to kind of do the Pepsi challenge with those two rifles.
There you go. Battle of the Guns, M16 versus AR-15. A real assault weapon.
Oh.
This is a cheap imitation.
Man, I think we could use that for the next show. That's a great idea. Benny, we're going to have to bring you in on as like technical advisor for sure, if not a co-host.
That's for sure. Voiceover.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. You're probably more qualified than I am anyway. So, yeah, but it was a good time, man. I mean, it's funny in retrospect, I always kind of sit and reflect a little bit on stuff and getting to travel across the country as much as I get to and getting to see the sights and meet the people and just eat the food and just everything, man, from New York City to Texas to Illinois. I was just in Oklahoma a few weeks ago doing a commercial, and I just feel so incredibly lucky. I'm just a lucky dude, man. I get to do all this cool stuff after having done a lot of crappy stuff, like in, you know, as a police officer and having some really, fairly traumatic experiences, you know, in some tough, stressful situations. It's like such a breath of fresh air to get to do the things I get to do now. And it makes the journey worth it, you know, it really does.
That's for sure. And another thing about The Food That Built America on History Channel, final episode tonight, don't miss it, Jeff's in it, Mr. Harlan Sanders, is what it shows to all these wackos out there. Capitalism works. If it wasn't for capitalism, you wouldn't have that innovative entrepreneurship that turned into these mega brands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, I got a pack of friends and a bucket of fried chicken waiting on me. I'm going to tell you right now. We're ready for it.
All right. Well, I better let you go because it's always fun talking to you. We pretty much ate up three quarters of the show talking about good stuff, and we'll have to do this again for whatever reason if you're bored. You got my number now, so text me anytime.
Yeah, Benny,
or if you want to drop a line.
Oh, man, anytime. It's always a privilege to talk to you. And next time I think we'll hit some of the politics and we can probably solve some of the world's problems inside 45 minutes on the next show. Right.
Yeah, we'll try.
I believe. Well, thanks for having me on, Vinny. You're always good. And I just want to shout out to the listeners. Thank you guys for listening. You guys are the best. So thank you all.
And maybe next year when I'm down that way, I'll track you down and we can go have some fried chicken and a couple of cold ones. I'll introduce you to the wife.
Deal.
And bring your lady too.
Hey, man, done deal. Done deal. It's a double date.
All righty. Sounds good. Have a good one, Jeff.
All right. You too, Vinny. Stay cool, brother. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye now. There you have Jeff Sandor playing Colonel Harlan Sanders tonight on the History Channel, The Food That Built America. I love him. Now he's got me hungry for some KFC. Well, maybe for dinner tonight. I don't know. I had chicken last night. Homemade. Wife cooked it. Every once in a while, you want to get that greasy fingers that night, seven herbs and spices out of a bucket of chicken. Who else am I making hungry? Anyway, let's see what we've got. Cup Xfinity Trucks. Bristol this weekend, the night race, the one and only Xfinity Series out in Mid-Ohio, Trucks and Cup in Michigan. And winning the truck race, Austin Hill. Led three times for 26 laps. Sheldon Creed, second. Tyler Dipple, third. Brett Moffitt, fourth. Austin Wayne Self. Sounds like a country singer. Austin Wayne Self. Was fifth, Bryant Bailey Carey. Sixth, Grant Enfinger. Seventh, Stuart Friesen was eighth. Ray Ciccarelli, ninth. And Matt Crafton rounds out the top ten. Ross Chastain, who qualified on the pole, was 30th. Natalie Decker, one of the two ladies in the field, involved in an accident. She started 16th, finished 27th, and world traveler and frequent guest of the show. I'll have to get her back on. Jennifer Jo Cobb. Started 31st and wound up 19th. That lady never sits still. She was in Russia. She goes everywhere. She even raced in the series over there in Europe. Race took an hour, 50 minutes, 54 seconds. Average speed, 113 mile an hour. Margin of victory, we'll call it about an eighth of a second, 0.125 seconds. 17 lead changes amongst 10 drivers, 8 cautions for 35 laps. T.J. Bell Jr. led one of the laps. He's a former guest. He's been a guest on the show. I got to hook up with him again. In the points, Brett Moffitt leads the points with 2 wins. Grant Enfinger second with no wins. Stuart Friesen third. Austin Hill has 2 wins. He's fourth. Ross Chastain, 3 wins. He's fifth. Matt Crafton, 0 wins. Sixth. Johnny Sauter, 1 win. Seventh. And Tyler Ankrum with 1 win. He's eighth. That's the cutoff there. Let's find our winner, Austin Hill, talking about his win.
I'll go ahead with our post-race media availabilities. We're now joined by members of our race-winning team. We have driver of the number 16 truck for Hattori Racing, crew chief Scott Zibidelli, and owner of Chicky Hattori. Austin, we'll go ahead and start with you. Can you take us through your race?
Well, kind of an up-and-down race for us. We were having a little issue on pit stops and kept kind of falling back on restarts. And then I ended up speeding on pit road, and, man, just one thing kept happening and another. And I kind of didn't think we were going to get back up there. It was kind of hard to pass, but after a few laps and we got tired, the tires got worn, we had really good speed, and we could actually wrap the bottom really well and clear the guys coming off the corner pretty easy. So I can't thank Scott and these guys enough. Man, they've worked their tails off. This is a brand new truck, so first race on it, so we're 1-for-1 with it, so that feels really good. And can't thank Eno and Ison and United Rentals and everybody on board. Toyota Tundra was fast, so just can't thank everybody enough for all their support.
Go ahead.
There you have Austin Hill, the winning driver, out to Mid-Ohio where the Xfinity Series B&L Transport 170. Austin Sindrick. Wow, 2 Austins in a row. The only one who has a shot at making it an Austin triple header would be Austin Dillon, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Austin Sindrick started from the pole in the 22. Penske owned. Finished first. Led 3 times for 46 of the 75 laps. Christopher Bell, second place. A.J. Allmendinger finished third. Didn't get disqualified this time. The number 10 Chevrolet. Tyler Reddick was fourth. Noah Gragson was fifth. Justin Allgaier, sixth. Chase Briscoe, seventh. Cole Custer, eighth. Justin Haley, ninth. And Brandon Jones rounds out the top 10. Jeremy Clements, in 11th, but for him, he does pretty good on the road courses. I think he actually won a road course race and made the playoffs one year when an underfunded family team with some support from Richard Childress. Kind of good for him. I like to see underdogs do well, especially somebody who's been racing for a little while, trying to make it big. Looking for Jeffrey Earnhardt. Was he out there this week in the 18 or the 81? No Earnhardt. He might have been in the cup race this weekend. There was Austin Sindrick's second victory in the Xfinity Series. So he's got 2 victories in the series, and both of them have been this year. The race took 2 hours, 22 minutes. Average speed, 71.4 miles an hour. Margin of victory, 3.8 seconds. 10 lead changes amongst 8 drivers. 6 cautions for 17 laps. Pretty clean race. Figure 2 of them are stage enders. Well, stage 2 conclusion had a few incidents when that was being dropped. The green and white checker flag being dropped. It's Cindric's first victory and second top 10 in 2 races at Mid-Ohio. So he's doing pretty good on the roads. The points, Tyler Reddick leads, 3 wins. Christopher Bell, 2nd, 5 wins. Cole Custer, 3rd, 5 wins. They've been doing the battle there between the Stewart Haas Ford and the Gibbs Toyota with Cindric, with Custer and Bell. Justin Allgaier. Fourth in points, Austin Cindric is 5th, but he has 2 wins. When they reseed, they move up. Win, the amount of wins is the tiebreaker. Points don't matter in the playoffs until you use playoff points. Chase Briscoe, 6th. Noah Gragson, 7th. Justin Haley, 8th. Michael Annett, 9th. John Hunter Nemechek, 10th. Ryan Sieg, 11th. And Brandon Jones is the bubble guy at the playoffs. And the closest one to him below the bubble, Ray Goulding, is 108 points behind. Let's go to our winning driver, Austin Cindric.
We are joined with the race-winning team driver, Austin Cindric, and crew chief Brian Wilson, the 22, after Xfinity Series Team Penske Ford. And Brian, we'll open up to you. Obviously, setting up a road course is pretty challenging. What was your view for the team?
Setting up for road courses is challenging, but we're very fortunate at Team Penske. We've got a really good notebook, a long history of having good setups, and then having a guy like Austin come in, you can obviously go off of his feedback and make those setups a lot better. So I feel like we've made a few gains throughout practice, but we were able to unload pretty close, and then obviously in the race. It was pretty awesome to see what Austin's able to do around a place like this.
And Austin, here are the names: Rick Mast, Steve Grissom, Chad Little, Jamie McMurray, William Byron, now Austin Cindric, winning their first 2 races back to back. A very rare feat in after Xfinity Series history. How does it feel to be part of that group?
I want to know how short the list is for 3. next week isn't going to be easy, but I've grown a lot at tracks like Bristol, and I'm already thinking about what I need to work on, where the groove's going to be, where our race car needs to be based off the spring race. So I'm pretty motivated to get one of these things done on oval. I think it's give our team a lot of confidence because, you know, we race mostly on oval. So when we come to racetracks like this, obviously, you know, we can have a lot of cars and confidence in me. And, you know, I think we're building that to those other racetracks. I'm just over the moon to win at a place like this. You know, get my first 2 wins within a week is incredible. I'm just so removed, thankful for Brian and everyone on the team sticking behind me. You know, I've had to learn and grow a lot this series. Before that, I had 1 year of stock car racing experience, and I was at the bus level. And even there, it took me a little bit to understand it all. And from really racing around places like this, GT cars, to drive a NASCAR truck, and then to be here. So I've grown a lot, and I'm glad the hard work started to pay off a little bit.
There you have your winner, Austin Cindric. Now for the main event of the weekend. Came down to a battle between Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson, Martin Truex. A lot of issues where fuel was coming into play. Some of your front runners wound up having a pit for fuel, which maybe some of the others pitted a little later for fuel and was able to have enough to hang on. But that being said, Kevin Harvick has been in a little bit of a slump in the fuel mileage race in the Mobile 1 Ford for Stewart Haas. Led twice for 22 laps. Didn't win any stages, so he only got 5 playoff points. Denny Hamlin wound up 2nd. Kyle Larson was third. Martin Truex Jr. came in fourth. He led twice for 43 laps. Daniel Suarez was fifth. Kyle Busch. Truex won stage one. Kyle Busch was sixth. Suarez fifth. Kyle Busch sixth. Won stage two. Led once for, and that was the only time he led was once for three laps and got one playoff point out of the deal. Ryan Preece was seventh. William Byron eighth. Chase Elliott ninth. And Alex Bowman rounds out the top ten. Obviously, Austin Dillon did not get the win. Neither did Austin Theriault. That would have made a triple Austin weekend if Austin won trucks, Cindric won the Xfinity, and if Austin Dillon or Austin Theriault, who is actually Dillon would have had a better shot. Anyway, your pole sitter and guy who led the most laps, Brad Keselowski, had fuel mileage issues and had to stop late, wound up 19th. And teammate who led the second most laps, Joey Logano, who started 8th, also with fuel issues, had to stop for fuel late and wound up 17th. So, that's what I mean. It came down to the fuel mileage. The guys that were key to win it had to gas up late just to finish the race. It was 2 hours, 40 minutes, 59 seconds. Average speed, 149 miles an hour. Margin of victory, 1.05 seconds. 19 lead changes amongst 8 drivers, 6 cautions for 24 laps. Of course, 2 stage conclusions, incidents on the stage 2 conclusion. So that kind of slowed things up. It was Harvick's 47th victory in 669 Cup Series races, his second victory and 15th top 10 this year. As I said, he's been in a little bit of a slump. Last year he won one more races, but he's in the playoffs, and that's what matters, and that's where it counts, and we're whittling it down. We only have like 3 races left, I think, until the playoffs, so. Kyle Busch is your points leader with 4 wins. He will remain the top seed unless Martin Truex, who has 4 wins, gets another one. There's a battle going there. Joey Logano is second in the points with 2. Harvick is third in the points with 2. Hamlin, 4th. Truex, 5th. Brad Keselowski, 6th. Chase Elliott, 7th. All of them have more than 1 win. They will be your top seeds no matter what. Kurt Busch is 8th with 1 win, and Brian Blaney, 9th with no wins. Alex Bowman, 10th with 1, so the seeding will change between 9th and 10th. Then you have Eric Amarola, William Byron, Kyle Larson, Eric Jones, Ryan Newman, and the bubble man is Clint Bowyer. But Daniel Suarez is only 6 points behind Bowyer, and Jimmy Johnson is 12 points behind Bowyer, so that could change. We'll have to wait and see. Let's hear from our winner, our winning team, Rodney Childers and Kevin Harvick. They probably got Childers in first, so.
Continue our post-race media availabilities. We're joined by our race-winning crew chief, Rodney Childers, for joining us. Rodney, congratulations. We'll go ahead and open it up for questions. Please raise your hand, and we'll get the mic over to you. We'll go over here to the right. Jerry?
Jerry, you want to take a turn on that? 2 out of the last 3, last fall, this fall, second race. it? Is it something about this particular time of the year for you guys here at Michigan, or is it just you guys are clicking all together?
Or not. There you go. You know, to be honest, we love coming to Michigan. We love this racetrack, and I think if you look at the history of the four car, we've been fast here every time we've ever came. So, you know, we had a great car here in the spring of my own doing. We had too much left front camera in the car in the spring and never could put ourselves in position to lead the race because every time we caution come out, we had to put four tires on our car when other guys were putting two on. So, you know, it's the biggest thing coming back was to fix that problem and to try to, you know, hit some more details and try to make the car a little bit better. But, you know, overall, it's the same car that we ran here last time. And, you know, it didn't hardly have a scratch on it last time. And to be honest, I was a little disappointed that it was only on the body plate for like half a day. And I'm like, surely to God, they didn't get everything done to that thing in a half a day that, you know, you try to continually make your cars better and update them. And so, yeah, it was good. And it's been fast all weekend. And everybody on the four team just did a great job of, like I said, hitting those details all weekend.
There you have Rodney Childers. Harvick's probably still in victory lane, doing the thing and makes his way down there. Anyway, let's take a look at this weekend, weather permitting. The annual 58th annual Bass Pro Shops NRA Night Race. Last year it was Kurt and Kyle. Kurt Busch and Kyle Larson. This year was Kurt, it was Kyle and Kurt, the Busch brothers. But your biggest lap leaders were two Fords, Logano and Blaney. Last year, your biggest leader were two Fords, Boyer and Blaney. Your third biggest leader was Chase Elliott and a Chevy. So, that being said, who am I going to pick? Will it be like last year was was a Ford and a Chevy because Kurt Busch drove the 41 Ford that Daniel Suarez is in now. But I'm looking to see. Now I'm going to go out on a limb. Now nah, maybe it's not much of a limb, but can Kurt Busch pull it off? He was one in this race last year, second the first race this year. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say Kurt Busch will be my pick for this week. Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed today's show. I'm your host, Vinny Bonfigli. Special thanks to my guest, the one and only Jeff Sandor. Catch him tonight on History Channel as Colonel Sanders. Doesn't it make you want fried chicken? And go ahead. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of today's interview. You can get to my Facebook page or go to my Garage Talk Live Facebook page and let me know what you think. Anyway, thank you all. Good day and good racing. We'll talk to you all next week. I'm Vinny. Bye-bye now.